What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Worship Fuel Show. So glad that you're with us today. My name is Matt McCoy. I'm the founder of loopcommunity.com and the host of the Worship Fuel Show. Today, I have a very special guest, my good friend, Robbie Busick from Nashville. He's the founder of The Indie Friend. We're going to talk about releasing your own original music. And he's going to tell us about The Indie Friend and what they can do to help support you. So I'm really excited about this conversation. Let's go ahead and bring in Robbie now.
Looking for affordable, high-quality resources for your church? Check out the app lineup from Worship Tools. You can build sleek service presentations in Presenter, schedule volunteers to those services in Planning, access chord charts and other worship materials in Music Stand, and manage church attendee information with Community.
Robbie, how's it going, man?
It's going great. Thanks for having me.
Good to see you. Coming. Are you in Nashville today?
I am. Yep. Running awesome. From interview to interview.
Awesome. So tell us about like who you are and what your experience is in the Christian music industry. You and I have known each other for, gosh, I don't know, maybe 10 years.
Yeah.
When I started Loop Community, we got connected. So tell us just a little bit about who you are and how you got, what you've been doing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for everyone watching, I sit in your shoes too, as a fellow songwriter, maybe worship leader. So I got started just leading worship, like most people do, and had a passion for that, right? And kind of got in that accidentally a little bit, in that I was BGVing for a college campus ministry, and the worship pastor that was there left to try out for American Idol. And they ended up not coming back. They ended up winning the whole thing. And so when he never came back, they needed someone to fill the shoes. And I just started jumping in and leading worship and kind of fell in love with it, honestly. I'd grown up in church, grown up singing. But it was different to lead a team and learn what that took, and especially not playing an instrument. And I got introduced to a lot of new music at that time. Music like from Jesus Culture, Bethel Music. And that kind of led me on a journey of, well, what are they doing that's different, and how do I learn from that and grow from that? So after college, I moved out there to Bethel with my wife, and we went through the School of Ministry, and in your third year, you do an internship. And so I interned at Bethel Music right around the time that they had just released This Is Amazing Grace, and One Thing Remains was out. They had done the For the Sake of the World album in my class. And they were just flying by the seat of their pants, trying to figure out, like, how do we do this label thing as a church, right?
Yeah.
And so I jumped in, and basically there was a role that was opening for publishing. And so I jumped in headfirst with very little understanding of the industry to just help out, right? And had to grow really fast in understanding the industry. And I was reading books. I was on the phone with entertainment lawyers. I was flying to Nashville for admin conferences and just trying to learn as much as I could, as quick as I could. So I did that for about 3 years on the publishing admin side, which is probably where we met. Yeah. And then that turned into, you know, I'm an extrovert, and I was sitting behind a computer screen all day long. And so I was just like, I think I could serve us better. What if I kind of came over to the label side and helped manage the process of creating albums? And so I started, with the help of some of my superiors, like extracting stuff from everybody's heads and putting it into a big process that we could follow. We were a church music label, right? And we're doing these big compilation albums, and we decide somewhere along the way we're going to start trying out this solo artist thing. Like, we have so many people that have something to say beyond one or two songs a year on a big project, and we wanted to steward that well. And so we had six albums going on at a time at any point in the year, you know, so there was a lot to do there. But in that process, I fell in love with writing songs. And I led worship at the church with all my heroes for years. and had a passion for that. And part of my job lent itself to that process for the artists that were on the label. So I would gather the songs from all the artists, and I would basically kind of DJ song listening sessions for Ryan and Joel, and then would give feedback. And so I fell in love with that and realized there's, you know, we're a church music label. We weren't we were a legitimate label and we functioned like that, but we, you know, the senior leadership was the A&R. The senior leadership was the, like, it was, everything was kind of as we went along because it had to be so closely connected to the DNA of ministry, right?
Yeah.
So it wasn't as simple as just we have an A&R guy, right? So I would help them listen through the songs, they'd give feedback, and through that process, we start, as doors kept opening and influence kept growing, we started building out the publishing portion of the label and signing writers and signing more artists and learning how to open up opportunity for them to write beyond even our own ability to put an album out, right? Mm-hmm. So that was over the process of about 6 or 7 years living in Reading, and then felt like I was being led to move closer to family. And so Nashville was kind of an obvious choice for me. And so in 2018, I moved to Nashville to open up the Bethel Music Office in Franklin and grow connection, relationship in Nashville with producers, artists, A&Rs, publishers, all of that, and kind of grow the relationships that had been built. It was a huge thing that I felt entrusted with. And I definitely wasn't alone and had a lot of support in that. But that's kind of where I've come from as far as some of the overall experience, right? Of everything from publishing, label. At one point I was helping manage manufacturing and distribution and even digital distribution. And so, yeah, I started getting a lot of calls, right, from external church movements and indie artists, even of like, how do we do this thing? And realizing, you know, I've sat in your shoes. I had to figure this out for a while on my own. And as a songwriter, as a worship leader. And so when I moved to Nashville, there was a lot more of that that started happening. How do we do this thing? How do we write songs and release them, whether as an indie artist or in the context of a church environment, right? And it's very nuanced in the church. And there wasn't, back when I was with Bethel, there weren't a lot of examples, right, of how to do this church music thing, right? There were churches doing music, but not labels, right? There, you know, so that was kind of interesting. I spent a lot of time on the phone with the few people that I could that kind of had kind of built a system for that. And a lot of time on the entertainment lawyer phone calls as well. So, but yeah, I grew in that and moved here in 2018. I've been here since 2018. And I was with Bethel Music for 3 more years and then felt like it was time for me to pursue more of the creative route for myself. I felt like it was something from the Lord telling me like, hey, you have to steward the songwriting thing that I've put in your life, right? It became an obedience thing. And I was kind of, I think, hiding behind helping everybody else and saying that I was stewarding it by helping everyone else. So I quit and left really well. And then almost two days later, I got a random text message offering me a publishing deal as a writer. I wasn't looking for it or asking for it. And so now I'm a signed writer. I write for CCM, for worship, every once in a while, pop or country, but, so yeah, that's kind of,
who's that with? What publishing entity?
That's with, Curb Music or Curb. Cool. Curb Stories. So, they're a great team over there. They've done a lot to support me, and I've had a few cool opportunities with songs going places from things that I've written. Oh, the other thing I've done is I've done a lot of in the like creating songwriting opportunities. Been a part of getting different type of songwriting collectives going in the past, and have fallen in love with doing that and helping churches figure that out too. So, yeah, that's kind of like all the different things I've got my hands in.
Yeah. So, which is a lot. And so you have a ton of experience in this industry in a lot of different areas, you know, with the writing and publishing and distribution and, and then you start The Indie Friend, which I want to talk about that. What would you say? So a church wants to release their own music. What's their first step? Because there's a lot of churches out there that want to release, you know, music they're writing at their church. Like, what do you think is the first step of actually getting it out? So they've gotten the songs written. Now what?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, actually, let's say they have the songs written and they've recorded them. Now
what? Okay. Yeah. So I would say even before you get to writing and recording, you should have some things in place. Because, and I'll answer your question, but I find that a lot of churches, they do the thing, they get creative, right? And even indie artists, they get creative, they create, and then they're like, now what? And a lot of times
they skip some steps.
The now what sometimes comes because they haven't figured out how to connect it back to the identity, to the mission, the vision, and values of the environment in which those songs are supposed to serve.
So
it becomes, how do we do the music thing instead of how do I serve the environment I wrote the songs for?
So
that would be the very first thing. Because most people, when they call me, they're like, how do I do what Bethel did? Right? Or how do I do what Elevation or Hillsong or Passion City has done? And like it starts at stewarding the people in front of you. It starts at stewarding the heart with which God is actually working in your specific environment. Because if you try to be like or do the things that other people have done, you become an imitator and you fall into the noise and you don't stand out enough, right? So the only way to actually stand out and make a splash is to be authentic, is to be unique. And the only way you're going to be unique and authentic is to actually be tapped into the pulse of what God is doing in your direct environment. So if you've done that work and you've got buyout, you've got buy-in from senior leadership, and they are fully aware of what you want to do and they are supporting the process, and your songs have been listened to by senior leadership and they're on board, then once you've written and recorded the songs, there's a lot to think about, right? There is, how do we consistently introduce them to our environment without totally messing up our worship environment? You know, you have to involve your worship team in that process, assuming your worship team are even singing on those songs. There's all those types of things to figure out, right? But assuming you've done all the work, you've got the album, it's ready to go. I think the first thing that you work on is, how do we communicate getting this project into the world, right? Yeah, I could go upload the song or the album on a distribution platform, whether that's, you know, if you're independent, you're probably doing it through like a TuneCore, CD Baby, DistroKid, right? But the marketing of it can get real tricky too. Because as a church, as a spiritual environment, you don't want to be salesy and you want it to stay like worship before God, right? So the way you communicate gets really important. And I think the worldly model is, hey, look at me, I did this thing, right? And so we get out on social media and we see what's working for other people. And then we are like, hey, look at me. But I think that when you can use your message, and when you've done the work of mission, vision, values, and you know the story you're telling, and you've done the work of that, it can actually, your marketing, so to speak, can actually be a ministry opportunity even. I think it's important that we get back to realizing that if Jesus was the servant of all and we want to imitate him, that when we are worshiping him and pointing people unto worship, that we have the same mindset. Like, how can this post serve my audience, even in the marketing of the music. So I think it's good to have that kind of a plan in place. That's not just, okay, make all the posts, but like, how do we be intentional?
Yeah. Gosh, there's so many different questions I have, but one thing that I wanted to say is, you know, figuring out how to introduce songs to your church without mm-hmm. wrecking the worship environment. I think it's like something kind of like what you said. Like, how do you actually introduce these new songs without kind of, you know, disrupting the worship flow? And, you know, I think we've all been to a church where the worship leader or whatever, they just like are playing all of their own songs and people don't even know what the songs are. They're maybe not even very good songs, to be honest.
Yeah.
And it's just like kind of just killing worship in the church because they're just, the worship team is insisting on playing songs that they've written mm-hmm. and maybe not having total self-awareness that maybe these songs aren't that great. Yeah. How would you suggest a worship leader protects against that happening? Like just making sure that like the songs they're doing are actually like, you know, should be played at a church service.
Right. I mean, I think every church's standards of excellence is going to be different. The mm-hmm. environment in which you sing these songs the context is key for all of that, right? Like if it's a church with 50 to 100 people, like the requirement of excellence is not the same, right? In that sense. So I think feedback is super important for a worship pastor or worship leader. I think you can write, record, and release music, but if you don't create a culture for it, you're constantly mm-hmm. going to be in the dark when it comes to these types of decisions. Yeah. So like at Bethel, it became part, like we would do sermon series on worship. What is worship? What does it mean? How does it affect our hearts? How does it affect God? Like we were teaching and training, not just songs, but like what worship actually is. So it became a part of the DNA and the culture of the entire church. Yeah. So then there's context for when we introduce songs, what's actually happening in the room, right? They were trained ahead of time as they were shepherded but to be shepherded in worship, you have to have a pastoral staff that understands and values what you're mm-hmm. trying to accomplish when you introduce a new song. So it goes back to how does what I'm doing as a songwriter, worship pastor, connect well with the senior leadership team and the overall mission and vision and values of the house. And then when you feel empowered by that senior leadership team to make decisions like which songs should be a part of it, then there should be some sort of feedback process in place, in my opinion, of like, okay, the pastor may not have an ear for what's the best sound or whether it's good or not, but they are going to have a barometer on how does this affect my environment? Are my sheep being led well? Yeah. Right. So I think that should always be an open conversation with a worship pastor. I mean, very practical tips are like not introducing more than one new song in a set at a time. Right. Mm-hmm. Making sure that your team is really practicing those songs and nailing it down, communicating up front with your worship or with your environment, like, hey, we're trying out a new song. We mm-hmm. wrote this based on what we feel like God is doing in the environment, right?
Right.
One thing I'm telling churches is like, collect stories and testimonies from your congregation. Don't just sit down and try to write a song and happen in front of people. Include mm-hmm. your body in the process of the creativity. Like they may not be sitting in the songwriting room writing the song, but you can be inspired by what God's doing in the lives of the people. I think worship too many times becomes this performance of I'm up here and you're out there. But if it's not actually inclusive of the body you're leading, then you're already potentially leaving them behind in the mm-hmm. process. Yeah. So I think that's a powerful way too. But as far as the like, is the song good or not, right? I think sometimes your environment will kind of show it if you have some self-awareness. And if you don't, hopefully you have a team around you that can be like, hey, I don't know that that's landing like you think it is.
Yeah. So let's shift gears a little bit and talk about money. Sure. And how do churches actually get their money back? And should they even expect to get their money back from a project? Because, you know, you and I know, there's not a lot of money flowing. You know, anybody who's watching music business news would know that there's all sorts of talk about streaming services not paying enough. And so a church doing this, is it even possible to earn your money back? And should they even expect to earn their money back? Because it's expensive to make and record music.
Mm-hmm. My opinion on this might not be super popular, but I'm not talking or giving an answer based on my previous environment of working at Bethel or communicating on behalf of a song or anything like that, because what they actually did was create a full label, right? So that's a different context than what I'm speaking to now.
Right.
For churches, most churches, to be able to even collect royalties when you put them out, the moment you put songs out on a DSP, that's intellectual property that is making some sort of money. There is a financial thing happening. It may not be significant. It might be micro pennies, but it's happening. And because money's involved, there are legal repercussions that are involved in that process, right? And so it's important to steward that well and make sure that you are collecting when you put money out, when you put songs out, because the songs that are, you know, a lot of churches will say, well, we actually don't care about the money. It's just about worship. And that's beautiful. But if you're not doing the stewardship of collecting the royalties, then they become black box royalties. And you probably know all about that, or at least some, but like the digital service providers like Spotify and Apple Music, that money doesn't belong to them. So they have to get it off their books. It gets put into black box royalty land, and then it gets paid out based on market share. And that market share is basically Sony, Warner, and Universal. And they're not even the bad guys. It's not a bad guy, good guy thing in that scenario, but they're not necessarily always aligned with the church vision of the songs that have been put out, right? So, you know, in the Bible, it talks about like the wealth of the world and the wicked's laid up for the righteous, not the other way around. So we do want to be good stewards, right? But at the same time, when you pour $50,000, $100,000 into a project as a church, and you're not an established brand in the marketplace, you're not going to see that money back. A stream on Spotify is 0.0004, of a penny.
Yeah.
So, to a million streams is going to pay out $4,000, maybe. Right? So like the amount of people we know that are independent, even hitting a million streams on a song is very, very small. Right. So the way that I like to communicate to churches is if you may tell me you don't care about the money, but if you need to make the money back, you still care about the money. And it's not necessarily a heart issue. It's you're trying to be a good steward, like of your investment. But I think we have to have a little bit of a mindset shift, a little bit of away from the normal Western model of you put the work in, you get the money out, right? When it's a worship environment, you created that thing, that song for your specific context, for your specific environment. And the good reasons for doing that are you have an audience of people that want to be able to engage with the songs that are specific to their local body outside of a Sunday morning service, right? They want the soundtrack of what they're experiencing in their community playing throughout the week. That's a good reason to write, record, and release music. If you need to make the money back off of that, you probably shouldn't record music in the church, unless you have a plan to grow the brand into its own label and manage the creative careers of artists and songwriters, which that's not what most churches are about. They just want to get the music out, right? So I typically tell people it's possible to make money off of your songs. It's not impossible, but it is hard. And you have to be willing to in the work that's required on the marketing side too. And getting playlist pitches and doing all, growing your YouTube platform and doing all the things that a normal label is going to do for an artist that they sign to be able to make any of that money back, if you can make it back. But I typically tell churches, if you need to make the money back, it's going to affect the culture of your church. And here's why. The creative process, right? The way that you write songs and you release them and you record them, when you need to make the money back, you start asking questions. Well, how do we do that? And then it starts getting into the research of, well, how do we get more streams? How do we get more, visibility on our product? And then you're selling your worship sound, right? Again, there's nothing wrong with making money off of it, in my opinion. But when the goal becomes, I have to make money instead of I have to worship before the Lord, then the way that it will affect your environment is, on a Sunday morning, you will think, I have an album coming out in a month and we need good market adoption. So I need as many people listening to this song, and I need the artists from the album singing those songs on Sunday morning. And so your Sunday morning services are no longer, God, what do you want us to sing today? And who should sing today? And now it's, we've got that figured out already. Right. And so like the decision, you in some ways remove God from the decision-making process, but then we spiritualize it and say, well, it's for him. Right.
Yeah. Right.
But did we even talk to him about it? So that affects the culture of your worship, which is what we don't want. And so I think there's a fine line between, we want to be good stewards when there is money being made, but we don't want to create unto the point of making an investment back, because the whole point wasn't to make money off of something. It was to worship God and help other people do it too.
Yeah.
Hopefully
it really
that
is a
question.
Well, it really is a perspective shift of being open to the idea that your return on investment may not be monetary. That
it's kingdom.
It's kingdom. It's going to look different.
In the same way that you send a missionary out into the mission field with finances to support what they're doing, right?
Right.
When people are investing in those missionaries or donating to those missionaries, we're not asking, how are we getting that money back? The gospel is advanced. The kingdom is advanced, right?
Right.
And so in our Western mindset, we lose a little bit of that, right? Like if you read about the Old Testament, even like the way that the Levites were taken care of was by the 11 other tribes, right? Who were businessmen, who were, in the marketplace. They were making money. And then the Levites lived off of the tithes of the other 11 tribes. It's a different kind of a model and a different mindset shift that I think we're still trying to figure out in the church. Like we don't want to put new wine in an old wineskin. Right.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I think we're all trying to figure out a little bit.
Yeah. What do you think is the most challenging piece for churches who are trying to do this?
I think the most challenging thing is it's easy to spiritualize behavior. Meaning we can say, I'm doing this for God. I am, we're going to pour all this money and we want to make the money back. But maybe we say it's not about the money, but the more people that hear my music is more kingdom reach. Right. Yeah. And so somewhere along the lines, we can get into the idea that numbers equal impact. Right. Hmm. And that may or may not be true. But you've got algorithms pushing songs and you've got all of these, like people listen to it for 30 seconds and it counts as a stream and then they skip to the next song. You don't know what the full user behavior is on your music, right? And the more people are listening to it, it can be an example of like, hey, this is actually having a good impact.
Yeah.
But in the same way, if that becomes our metric for success with worship, I think we're getting off track. So, like at the end of the day, you know, yes, Jesus ministered to 5,000, but he had his 3 and his 12, right? And the industry almost requires you to become a celebrity to sell music, right?
Yeah, right.
We don't want to be trying to be celebrities as worship leaders. Sometimes it happens, but it's not, it shouldn't be the goal. And I think most people would say that's not my goal, but social media and algorithms all require you to get out in front of people all the time and say, look at me. So I think it's just kind of a different approach. I don't think it means avoiding social media or not spending money on marketing. I think it's just more about constantly going before God and keeping our motives pure in that process. And I think it's so easy to spiritualize what we're doing and saying it's for God or that it is God when he may have even asked us to do that. I think that's probably more of an like kind of an external challenge. I think a lot of internal challenges that a church will face, that's probably the hardest thing, is do you truly have buy-in with your senior leadership?
Right.
If your music thing takes off and it's awesome and you don't have a great connection with your senior leadership team, you could see church splits happen. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's not even because you're trying to rebel against things or people. It's like this music thing is taking a life of its own and you feel a responsibility to steward it even, right? Like, and you've got hearts that you feel like God's entrusting you with. And if it's bumping up in at odds with the mission, vision, values of the house it started in, you know, that can be a challenge. So I say even before you're writing and recording, you're involving that whole team from the beginning in your vision and how you are trying to serve that vision. And that it doesn't have to be at odds, right?
Yeah, that's good. Any just practical tips you have? It could be about anything, financial, legal. One question I do have is a tip on, you know, I think that a lot of worship leaders, churches who release music, there's so much excitement and build up to the moment of release. You finally like release the music, you think like a lot of people are going to hear it and be blessed. And then there's just like, you look at your stream count and there's 100 streams and half of them were you or your mom. And that could be pretty deflating.
Yeah.
Any tips on like how to actually get more streams? Like how do you get more people to hear your music in a sea of tons of other new music coming out?
Yeah. I think it's very challenging. There's certain like metrics that even the platforms are looking for before they start helping you out with algorithms that get the songs in front of people. You know, like if you don't have 10,000 monthly listeners, you're way less likely to pick up or for an algorithm to be kind to you. Right. Yeah. I think that when you have collaboration out of relationship and not out of trying to use somebody else's platform, that can be very powerful. I think writing songs with other churches could be really helpful. And with the idea of, I don't just want that other church to adopt my song. Like, God, what are you doing in our region? And how do we all collaborate together and communicate through song? And then we all introduce these songs to our environment. And then you've got multiple audiences and you start building a local following that grows. I always go back to like steward what's right in front of you and tend to that and then try to grow. Don't try to go massive immediately. Going massive, it can actually, or like when you try to just reach out big or try to land on that big editorial playlist or whatever it is that you try to do, it's like you're playing in a giant ocean, right? And you as a fish may not be the fish that they're looking for. You're like, oh, there's a fish that might get you a stream and there might be a ton of people that see your music, but it's not organic and authentically the people that are listening to you all the time. So you can even land on a big playlist and initially get like 10,000 streams from Big Playlist.
Yeah.
But then your listener base drops when they dropped your song off the playlist. And it shows you, oh, this wasn't real engagement, right? Yeah. So the number in and of itself isn't as important as even, okay, like Spotify will tell you how many times one listener streams your stuff, right? So that's more of an impact number of like, oh, like the people that do listen to me, they're listening to me a lot, right? I'm having real engagement. I'm having real impact with these people. My songs are actually touching them, right?
Yeah.
I think that's, for a church, the best way to get started with growing an audience is actually creating with your audience or pulling the stories from your audience or multiple audiences, you know, and having, we have a very unique, I don't know anywhere else that like there's always an audience happening all the time, consistently every week, you know, outside of a tour. We've got a very unique opportunity there to kind of spread the kingdom of God through music in that way. So, but you can pay for professionals that they can listen to your music and understand your genre, and they are specific in being able to help pitch your songs to playlists in a way that can help grow your organic audience, based on the fact that they're probably plugging your music into playlists that are specific to your subgenre, right? Yeah. The genre is Christian music and then praise and worship, but within praise and worship, there's a ton of different subgenres. And there's people out there that understand those and have those connections and kind of can help you grow organically, right? Fast growth, like super fast growth on platforms like Spotify, isn't always helpful for your long-term growth. So if you jump to 100,000 listeners overnight, and then 2 months later you're down to 30, Spotify sees that as a downtrend on your artistry. And then all of a sudden, your songs aren't showing up in playlists anymore, or you're not getting streams anymore. Right. And so it's better to have organic, consistent, long-term growth than trying to land on that one giant editorial playlist that has 50 different types of listeners in it.
Does distribution matter? Like the type or the distribution you go through?
It depends on if we're talking about a distribution deal with a company versus an aggregator. So
I guess I'm thinking of like CD Baby, DistroKid.
Oh, yeah.
What are they? That's a distribution company.
Yeah, they're like an aggregator distribution platform. So what I mean by aggregator is you're not going through a label for distribution, right?
Yeah, got it.
So the aggregator distribution options are like your CD Baby, TuneCore, and they take your music and they've got all of those platforms that they plug your music into, right?
Yeah.
So I do think that they matter, but it also depends on your goals. So like a DistroKid, they're a really popular one right now. They have some potential special inroads to Spotify, like with like discovery mode and different things like that, that are probably a little bit better than some of your other platforms. But with a lot of these aggregator platforms, you don't necessarily have a personal representative, which can become challenging if you have issues with uploads and things like that, where, you know, you're just a number. So it's 2 or 3 days for you to hear back from customer service. So it can matter. But most of them out there are like that, but they'll offer all kinds of different things, from a la carte marketing services that they can offer, publishing administration even, which can get kind of hairy when you're dealing with aggregator platforms. You know, playlist pitching, even all those things that they try to add value and charge you for. I think the big thing to look out for with aggregator platforms is some of them are fee based and some of them are percentage based. So like a DistroKid, I believe, is fully fee based, meaning you're going to pay a higher fee up front, but that's all you're paying. normally you're going to end up spending more on DistroKid than some of the other platforms because the fee is high enough for them to make money off of that when your streams are not high, right? But like a CD Baby or a TuneCore or one that might be more of a percentage based, if you have a song that goes viral, then they're making a ton of money and you're losing a lot of money. So a lot of people will opt in for the fee base versus the, you know, even though it'll actually cost them more up front.
Yeah.
So it kind of depends on your goals and what you're looking for from an aggregator. I think Symphonic is kind of a newer one on the scene that's pretty popular, that's kind of a middle of the road as far as their business model. But they seem to be pretty artist friendly. So it just kind of depends on your goals.
Yeah. That's helpful. So tell us about the Indie Friend and what the Indie Friend can do for churches and artists.
So the Indie Friend in and of itself is like a three-pronged approach to all of the different consulting and business experience that I've had in music. So we do a monthly membership instead of charging a crazy high amount for a course that walks you through Music Business 101. So that includes what publishing is, how publishing royalties flow from a stream all the way to you and your bank account. The different types of licenses that are out there that can help you make money off of your songwriting, and then going into sound recording, what money is associated with your sound recording. It goes into all the different places you need to be registered to make sure you're collecting your royalties. Most songwriters and artists, the one thing they know about publishing is the PRO, ASCAP, BMI, or CSAC in the US. But that's actually only 1/3 of your publishing income. The other 2/3 go somewhere else, and most people don't even know what that is or where that is. So we go through that type of stuff, and then we'll do like how-tos of how to literally go and register your songs in all the different places that you need to. Yeah. So that's kind of our e-course. And along with that membership, we point people to resources like a Loop community or like distribution platforms or potential publishing administration, where we don't do all of that for you, but we can point you in the right direction through partnerships that we've made. Right.
Yeah. Right.
And then the other part of the Indie Friend is artist development coaching. So, as the way people listen to music has changed, labels have had to change how they operate. So there's a lot less artist development within a label environment. It's way more, a lot of times they're looking for artists who already know who they are, who are already fully developed. They have their sound. They may even already have built up an audience, and the label is going to act more as like an investor in the business that an artist has already built.
Yeah.
Right. But the problem with that is there are so many of us out there, artists, that do still need the help and the guidance of who are you? What is your sound? Does that even show up in your music when you create? Once it does, do you know how to communicate that to the world? Do you know what type of resources you need? So the coaching is kind of that process. So that's a separate thing from the membership. And then I'm about to launch a church product. The church product is basically, I'm calling it Kingdom Music Framework, how to develop a songwriting culture in your church. And it goes into a lot of what we've talked about today, the good reasons to write, record, and release music, and the bad reasons that you should stay away from. If your music is just a tool to get more butts and seats in your church, it's probably not a good idea. Things like that. But then I also walk through practical steps of like giving them resources for putting on songwriting retreats, what that looks like, what are the logistical things behind that, types of contracts they may need to think about. Does the church own the intellectual property? Do the writers own the intellectual property? How does that work?
And that's stuff you want to figure out beforehand. You don't want to deal with that later after a song blows up.
Or like, does this affect our 501c3 status? All those types of things. So I get into a lot of that in the church course, and that is launching in June. So
That's exciting.
Those are all the things that I currently have going on, in addition to just, I also consult on the side of IndieFriend for artists and churches and stuff.
Yeah. That's awesome, Robbie. It's amazing what you've built, and you definitely have the experience for it. That's for sure. So how do people find you? Like, how do people get involved with IndieFriend?
Yeah. So a lot of it has been word of mouth. But I do have a website that kind of explains all the things that we do. It's just theindiefriend.com.
Okay.
And people can go there and search for it. I think I've also shared a link that might be at the bottom of this video later that will point people to a waiting list for the church course if that's really what you're wanting to figure out. But yeah, those are just theindiefriend.com. I'm also on social media. If you look up The Indie Friend, you'll find me. And
awesome.
And then I'm in Nashville. And if you're around Nashville, you can hit me up for coffee or something.
Yeah, that's awesome. Robbie, thanks for taking the time to join us on the show.
Yeah, and thanks for having me.
Thanks for what you're doing to pouring into worship leaders and churches. Super helpful.
Absolutely.
All right, we'll see you around.
All right, been a pleasure.
All right, you guys, great conversation with Robbie Busick from The Indie Friend. Write down in the comments now, what is one thing you're walking away from this interview with? What's one thing maybe you learned that was helpful? Make sure you go check out The Indie Friend. Go to theindiefriend.com. Find them on socials as well. And take one of their courses. If you're interested in releasing music, make sure you do it right. This is stuff you want to really do right from the beginning. It's kind of harder to unwind it later after you've released it all. Start with a good foundation by releasing and setting up all the stuff the right way ahead of time, especially if you're launching a worship ministry or church. If you're wanting to release music from your church, you want to get your whole leadership on board with that. Your pastor, whoever needs to be on board with it, all the leadership needs to be on board with it. You guys all have to be on the same page. So it'd be good to even take this course together. So anyways, go to theindiefriend.com, check it out. Thanks, Robbie, for joining us. And make sure you hit the subscribe button to make sure you stay up to date for future Worship Fuel shows. Make sure you also check us out on Apple Podcasts. Our podcast is there. You can listen to it. If you don't have time to be watching videos, you can just listen to this. So make sure you go subscribe on wherever you listen to podcasts. We're there. So thanks for joining Worship Fuel. We'll see you next time.